You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
So, welcome to Line Noise once again. And it wasn't so long ago that I was introduced to the world of Naya Beat Records, which is a label that's operating out of Los Angeles. I think the title of Naya Beat Volume 2 says it all. South Asian Dance and Electronic Music, 1988 to 1994. Obviously, it's not all. Everything they do isn't limited to those years, but that record was. And anyway, that was my introduction. And what a fabulous, fabulous piece of work it is. More recently, they brought out a record that has blown my mind, Mohinder Kaur Bamra's long-lost 1982 album, Punjabi Disco, which is one of those albums, like, is fascinating, really, really early, and also brilliant. You know how, like, sometimes you get those experimental albums, and, like, they're important albums, you're like, I should listen to that, and you're like, well, yeah, I'm listening to it. But this is brilliant. It's an absolutely fantastic piece of work. And I was like, well, where on earth does this come from? I'm not going to tell you now, because I spoke to Turbo Tito on Rags from the label, about it, and they explained the fascinating story that's behind it. So we spoke about Punjabi disco, we talk about cult classics, we spoke sort of in general about South Asian dance and electronic music and if it's kind of been a bit overlooked, and we spoke about digging for records in India, which is apparently very different from digging for records in many other places. It was really great to speak to them, and I hope you enjoy it. Line Noise is, as you know, supported by Cupra. Thank you.
Welcome, Raghav and Philippe from Naya Beat Records. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. I mean, I want to say I became aware of your label quite recently, which was when you released the absolutely awesome compilation Naya Beat Volume 2, South Asian Dance and Electronic Music 1988 to 1994. I absolutely loved it. Is that a sort of fitting introduction to the label, you think?
Yeah. What do you think, Philippe?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think so. Yeah, the first compilation is like slightly older, but it all fits pretty good together. Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, no.
You know, Naya Beat Volume 1 was how the label started, and you know, we had a fair few releases between Volume 1 and Naya Beat Volume 2, but I think we like to look at those series as kind of like almost like a representation of who and what we are as a label. And you know, Volume 2 took about 4 years to kind of compile because we had to find material that we thought was worthy enough of being, you know, kind of put together on a compilation like that. But I think the story evolves from Volume 1, but I think it's very much representative of us trying to find these lost and kind of underground sounds from, you know, South Asia and the broader diaspora. So
I suppose that's kind of what we're getting to. But I mean, what does Naya Beat do for people who don't know? How would you define what you do?
So you know, I think our how we started was, you know, I think it was born out of a desire to uncover a lot of these amazing sounds from the subcontinent and the border diaspora, music that was being made, you know, between the late 70s and the early 90s, at a time when, you know, electronic music and, dance music was essentially influencing, you know, South Asian culture. And there were a lot of artists that were making, incredible music that, you know, wasn't, you know, Bollywood driven or film music driven, which I think is what a lot of people associate South Asian music from that era with. But there were a lot of individual artists putting out great recordings that just never really went anywhere. You know, they were, this phrase we kind of lean on a lot in many ways. They were too South Asian for the West and too Western for South Asia. So this music they were making got lost. It just got lost in the mix and disappeared into obscurity. And so, you know, the music we believe is as timeless as ever, as amazing as ever. And so the ambition of the label really is to uncover those sounds and to bring them to the forefront in the same way that Habibi Funk does for, you know, Middle Eastern music, North African music, and Soundwave's done for Ghanaian and Nigerian music, et cetera, et cetera.
I've I've got to say, looking at the volume two of the compilation, I didn't recognize any of the names in it, I think.
Great.
I thought I knew about music, but I didn't recognize any of them. And I sort of think maybe when I looked at them later, I had some idea, but no, it was really, really new for me.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the point, right, Philip? I mean, that's, you know,
yeah, and also
what we're
like,
looking to do.
For me personally, it's been so fun because when me and Raghav met and kind of like the project kind of started happening, I was like completely clueless to most of this music. When I thought about South Asian or Indian music, my only reference was kind of like Bollywood. For me to like hear all this stuff was just like, whoa, there's this whole world that I didn't know existed. So for me, it's like a constant discovery because, Raghav is the one who was like the crazy digger, you know? So, yeah. And it feels pretty cool to like be part of it. And then, you know, yeah, most of my friends who check it out, they have no idea what any of this is, and they're stoked, you know, because to hear something that never existed to them.
I mean, why do you think it isn't better known?
I mean, I think a few reasons. I think so one, you know, there's an interesting question as to like, why aren't there more South Asian focused kind of reissue archival labels? And I think we're more than just a reissue archival label, because, you know, a lot of what we do is also centered around remixes and we're getting into new music as well. But the question is, yeah, why aren't there many South Asian archival labels? And there were a number of archival labels, you know, about 10, 15 years ago that did some really great compilation, you know, Finders Keepers, you know, Vintage Voodoo, you know, Edo, who put out the 10 Ragas, so disco beat reissue. And then it kind of all kind of came grinding to a halt. And I think a lot of the reason is that it's really, really hard to license this music. And, you know, when we first set out to do Nayabeat Volume 1, it was a project that was kind of born out of the pandemic in many ways. At least the energy and drive to get it done was driven out of us really, like, you know, needing something creative to do, something that felt like, you know, fulfilling. And so we spent about a year and a half, or close to a year and a half, literally trying to like secure licenses for Volume 1. It was a lot of work. And so I think the bar is quite high, the barriers to entry, so to speak. It's not easy to do, but that year and a half is as freakingly painful as it was, I think was really, really helpful because it did allow us to like develop all these amazing relationships with artists, with musicians, with, you know, private label people, that has like just really like kind of reaped benefits for us and all of our successive releases since then. And so I think that's one. And then I think two, the reason why a lot of these artists aren't known is, I think, just to the point we were kind of alluding to earlier, these were kind of groundbreaking artists, actually artists that did actually become, that went on, or some of which who went on to become really famous and important. But at the time that they were making this music, say in the early 80s, they were really the first people that were pushing the envelope, you know, and you know, they were stuck in this place of cultural ambiguity, cultural displacement. You know, like if you were a diaspora South Asian, British Asian artist in the UK, and you were making, you know, new wave Hindi new wave music, like one of the artists that we've released, Pinky Ann Rahal, you know, how on earth were you going to get that music out to people? I mean, you were really doing something that no one had done before, right? And it was, you know, there were no mechanisms in place. You know, your local, you know, English music label wouldn't know what to do with a Hindi new wave album. And then in turn, your Indian label, which is a lot of these artists would actually go to India to get their music released. And, for whatever reason, these Indian labels would release it, but they had no idea what to do with it either, you know. So they would actually put it out, but there was no marketing. They didn't know how to contextualize it. Actually, this Hindi New Wave album by Pinky and Rahal called Tere Liye, it was branded as disco, which had, there's nothing disco about it, you know. And so there was just no weight, there was no infrastructure or willingness to contextualize and bring this music to the masses. And I think that's why it just kind of got lost by the wayside.
You mentioned it was hard to license. Was that because people were hard to find, or was it because they just weren't interested, or what?
So they were hard to find. In some cases, some of the music in Volume 2, the seeds of those, the kernels of that, of us having that music on that compilation on Volume 2, started maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you know, when we kind of first started the label. And with some artists, it's taken just a long time to build trust and build that connection and to drive that conviction that they should, you know, do something with us. And then, you know, the third piece too is, you know, if you're doing stuff with a major label, it becomes a lot more challenging, right, to kind of get things over the finish line sometimes. And so with Volume 1, for example, when we first kind of came up with our ideal track listing, the label that, you know, there were about 5 tracks in the compilation that actually were with one kind of major label in India. They kind of strung us along for a while, and then kind of, you know, kind of at the last minute, basically said, look, all of the tracks from the compilation have to be from us or we can't do this. So we had to essentially pull those 5 tracks off. So, you know, you run into those types of stumbling blocks all the time, you know, so it's just this kind of constant exercise and, you know, trying to get things over the finish line, but then you also have to adapt to the scenarios that you get, you know, that get thrown at you.
I mean, you sort of mentioned it in passing, but you're both sort of DJs and producers, Rags and Turbo Titon, respectively. And you re-edit a lot of things on the compilations. Why do you do that? What's the thinking there?
I mean, that's kind of how the whole project started. Is me and Raghav got connected through our friend Daniel T, because Raghav's working on making a mixtape of all these old tracks that he had. And in my former band, Poolside, I used to do a bunch of mixtapes that are very, like, produced. So I would add elements and kind of, like, just to make a more, like, cohesive sound for the whole thing. And so we got, like, paired together to do this mixtape. And then basically what comes out of making a mixtape like that is you end up having stuff that you can technically call re-edits or even like remixes, because, you know, you're adding so much to the tracks. And some of this music was kind of like ideal for this, because the recordings and the productions were so poor that you basically, like, it would hurt you if you played it at a club, you know, like distorted, overly loud vocals and just stuff like that. So so that's kind of like how the label actually started, because we started like as a mixtape idea, and then we were talking about, like, well, if we like add production to these things, then we should release it, because like we're like altering the music so much, but if we put it out, we should do it like legitimately, and then so that these artists can actually maybe make some money. And so it's like, well, let's make a compilation out of it then. And the funny part is, like, we never made the mixtape. It became like the first compilation, and then it all started. But that's kind of like, I guess, a choice we made, is like, if something has like a core idea or a sound or something that we really like, but then just kind of like adding some stuff and remastering and lots of restoration stuff. And we were kind of like just cool with the idea of like, hey, it's okay that we like mess a little bit with the original so we can like present it in a way that's a little more like digestible for most people. So, so yeah, that just kind of became a thing for us then.
And do you DJ this music out in clubs?
Yeah, we do.
In LA or over other places? Where do you play?
Yeah, we played a bunch of times in LA, and we've been to New York. And then it's kind of like getting more and more, just getting more demand for it now. So we're like actually going to play a festival in Thailand in December. And through that, we're like trying to get other gigs around that area. So yeah, it's kind of like becoming a little bit of a thing. So that's fun.
So
yeah, we're playing Wonderfruit actually, which we're excited about in Thailand. So and then a few other gigs in South Asia.
Cool.
Southeast Asia.
Well, you have recently released an amazing long lost album from 1982, Mohinder Kaur Bamra's Punjabi Disco. I'd never heard of this record ever. And it's amazing. I mean, tell us about it. How would you describe this record to someone who didn't know?
You want to take a crack at it, Philip, and then I can jump on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I actually don't know, because like, it's like Kuljeet and his mom who are like doing like playing weddings and stuff with like very traditional Punjabi music, and then just having an idea that like, hey, disco is kind of like this new cool thing. Maybe we can like make people dance a little bit or more, and by like making this like Punjabi disco album. And but I wouldn't call it in any way like traditional disco. It's more kind of like the idea of what disco is in this like Punjabi version, and that makes it incredibly unique, because it's not, you know, it's not based on like years of being a like a disco artist. It's just kind of like, hey, let's try beat disco, and so it's very quirky in that way. And then the other thing, like that, the instrumentation is very unique, because again, like Kuljeet got these like synthesizers, the Roland drum machine and a synth and a string machine, and that's also not what you kind of like consider disco. You know, 70s like original disco didn't have actually a lot of like electronic instruments, to be honest. It was like, you know, it was just like the playing style that made it disco. So this is like more kind of like early kind of like electronic music, and so it's a crazy kind of mix of ideas of what disco is, to me at least.
Yeah, totally.
And so that just makes it like so weirdly awesome. So yeah, it's kind of like hard to totally just describe it, because it's very unique, but that's also what makes it so incredible.
I think it's one of those magical things that comes out of a certain youthful naivete of wanting to do something amazing. You know, like Kuljeet is probably I think you can say that he is the forefather of UK British Asian music. You know, I mean, he is a pioneer. He literally kind of invented Bhangra, or created Bhangra, was one of the pioneering producers. And this album is literally at the very, very, very beginning of his professional career as a producer, not as a player, because he'd been playing tabla since the age of six, but as a producer. And I think, you know, the the inspiration for this was that Kojit's mom, who was a venerated kind of figure in British Asian Punjabi circles as a traditional Punjabi singer, she would sing at all these traditional functions. And at a time when there was a lot of segregation between males and females, so actually at these functions, the women would actually typically be in another room doing their own thing. And then the men would, probably get drunk and, dance by themselves. And so she is traditional, but she's also a feminist, and she really wouldn't have that, right? So she actually would not perform unless the women were allowed into the room with the men. And then that eventually evolved with, men and women being in the same room, but sitting on opposite sides of the room. And Mohinder and Kuljeet really trying to kind of come up with ways musically to get, people to dance. And so I think the idea was really born out of that. Like, disco's big, everyone was doing a disco album in South Asia. In the early 80s, South Asia was all about, incorporating disco into traditional forms. And so it hadn't quite happened in the UK yet. And so Kuljeet came up with the idea of let's do a disco album. And that's the crazy naive kind of story behind how the album was born. And to Philip's point, yeah, it's not quite disco, it's not quite funk, it's not quite acid house, but it's all of these things in almost like various elements that are fused together. There's a bit of psychedelia, I think, as well. And then you have Mohinder, who's, singing traditional kind of Punjabi folk style. And I think all of that just comes together really magically into making this album what it is, and completely unique,
How old was Kuljeet? Like 21, 22 or something?
I think so. Yeah, I think around that age. Yeah.
Yeah. And that comes through like a lot. It's like, as a musician, you like remember those early days where everything is just guesswork. You don't know really what you're doing, but you're like super determined to make something cool. And I think that shines through. It's like a experiment. It's like just let's like make this happen kind of vibe. And I think that like really, really goes through it. I think if he had been playing this idea for maybe like 5-10 years and gotten like really like good at all these elements of what disco is, it would have probably been not as interesting. You can like hear that it's like it happened very fast and very spontaneous, and that's kind of like a lot of the magic.
How did you first hear it, and how did you feel when you kind of thought, hang on, we could reissue this?
So it's a bit of a funny story. So we're really good friends with this band Eugenia, Massimo and I actually we became friends many, many years ago, just from being record nerds and tipping each other on different records and trading records, and then we eventually would actually start buying Bhangra records and rare Punjabi records together. So we have that relationship that goes a while, that kind of goes many years back, and so we always kind of tip each other on new exciting things. And so one day Massimo kind of excitedly calls me up on WhatsApp, and he's like, oh, I've got something to show you. I'm not going to do his Italian accent, but I've got something to show you. And
I
he
got
literally,
something to show you.
He literally plays the record to me on the phone, like he's playing it on his turntable, and super excited. And I was like, I thought I knew every single South Asian grill there was to know, And so for me, not to know this record, that was I was quite dumbfounded, but B, it sounded like crazy, like the music sounded completely unique. And so that's kind of really when we got kind of tipped on its existence. And ironically, we were already in touch with Kuljeet about working with him on other things. You know, we were speaking to him about licensing music for kind of future compilations, future releases. And so we reached out to him and asked him whether he had the original mixdown masters or even better, the multi-tracks, and he replied very, very confidently that he did not have them, right? And so we were able to get our hands on the rips of the vinyl, and it was really tricky because the way the vinyl had been kind of mastered and mixed at the time, it would have been very difficult to do a reissue in the way we wanted it with the quality that we had in mind using that source material. Using the vinyl rips. So we kind of honestly, I think, shelved the idea and kind of moved on to other things. And then, maybe 2 years later, when we were getting ready for volume two, because we used two of Kuljeet's tracks on volume two, one where he was the artist and the other a track that he'd produced for this singer, Sangeeta. I don't know what kind of came or why we decided to reach out to him again about this, about Punjabi Disco. But we asked him again, hey, just to double check, are you sure you don't have the mixed and masters multi-tracks? And then lo and behold, in the time that, like, between those, in that 2 year period, he'd stumbled upon them, because it was COVID, COVID lockdown time. And he'd actually looking for projects to do and found a bunch of tapes in a closet somewhere in his house. And he found the multi-tracks to, multi-track masters to Punjabi Disco. And so that changed everything, in terms of this project now all of a sudden becoming kind of feasible and something we could kind of pull off in the way we wanted to do it.
The album was released in 1982, which was the same year, I believe, as 10 Ragas to a Disco Beat by Charanjit Singh, which we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. That album has become a cult classic. Do you think the same thing is going to happen with Punjabi Disco?
I think that's I think we have the conviction in the album where we believe it deserves a place, in the pantheon of South Asian kind of cult, cult 80s records. You've got 10 Ragas to Disco Beat and you've got Rupa Disco Jazz. I believe at least that Punjabi Disco belongs there. I think it's as important musically as those albums. It's as unique. It's as special. And I think it also tells a really important story about a community that was at a crossroads, right, in the early 80s in British Asians in the UK. And so I think for all those reasons, I think it's incredibly important. And it is also the first British Asian dance album ever recorded, and so there's a really interesting through line between that album and what we're seeing now with this nascent kind of Asian underground scene, kind of 2.0, and this the genesis of all of that really starts from these innovations that these first and second generation British Asian or Asian immigrants were making back in the early 80s.
Mahinda is still alive. Is there any chance of sort of doing any of this live, do you think?
It's a good question. I've never asked Kuljeet that. She's about to turn 90, so actually, good question. I think that's something we'll probably have to ask Kuljeet about. I think it would be amazing if she could.
Yeah.
But we've had the honor of working with another amazing legacy artist, Asha Puthley, who is about 10 years younger than Mohinder, who we took on tour and for the first time last year. And who had never really toured before with the band, and she's now, you know, performing at Glastonbury and We Out Here Festival and Summer Stage and a whole bunch of other big festivals, and she's managed to pull it off. So I guess never say never. I mean, you know, there's always,
yeah,
you know, there's always a chance.
Did you go to Glastonbury with them?
Sorry, what?
Sorry, and say that again.
You said she played at Glastonbury. Did you go with her? Or?
Yeah.
Rice got to go. I couldn't make it.
Oh, that must have been.
Her first show after, what was it, 44 years or something, was local here in LA. She played a hip venue called Zebulon. And then she did Morning Becomes Eclectic with KCRW. So I got to see that, and it was really fun. Yeah.
How much more of this brilliant music do you think there is to dig up? I mean, I can imagine there's quite a lot, but I mean, I've never tried.
I hope there's a lot more. I mean, you know, that's the genesis of our label. Look, there is a lot.
There is a lot. Also, like, yeah, just as Reg said earlier, like, there was like a whole portion of the original track listing for Volume One that that just got like really annoying to try and license, but that doesn't mean that it's gonna be impossible. So, you know, even just there's like material enough for a new compilation. So, and it, you know, if we uncover it, that's great. But it's weird how like Nyabeat has become like a platform for more than just reissues. Actually, like right now, we have the first kind of like original track that we made, and we're kind of exploring that, like finding people to like make music that's kind of like maybe inspired by the sound of the label, so like kind of vintage inspired, but new stuff, because why not? Yeah.
And do you have particular? Oh, sorry, go on.
No, absolutely. I just to build on what Philip was saying too, in addition to that, to new music, I think the kind of wonderful thing about South Asia is that there's a huge diaspora, and that diaspora is not just in the UK, but it's, you know, it's in Guyana, it's in Suriname, it's in the Netherlands, it's in South Africa. And a lot of these diaspora communities kind of fused with other cultures, you know. So if you look at the Indo-Caribbean, you've got, you know, Bhojpuri music from India, from Bihar, mixed with, you know, kind of African music that kind of created chutney and chutney soca. In Guyana and Suriname, and then, you know, those people then became displaced again because a lot of them moved to New York, or in the Surinamese all got citizenship and moved to the Netherlands. And so you have this just incredible story of evolution of how the diaspora and their kind of legacy as a community, but also their music, has evolved over time and taken on different cultures. And so there's just so much to explore, you know. I mean, like, you know, just with, like, you know, just Indo-Caribbean music in general, there's like, you know, a whole series of compilations that are worth doing, you know. So yeah, we're super excited about all of that, you know, the past as well as the present.
And also, like, yeah. There isn't any like rules for what it has to be. So like, if we run out of a certain type of music, we'll maybe explore something else. It's like the, you know, like, it's like, we definitely like think we like created like a platform for, oh, I'm getting a spam call. Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
And this platform is a great like opportunity to showcase a bunch of stuff for people who are interested, and yeah, it can be pretty much anything. So
Do you have like specific places you go and dig for the music? Are there like specific shops you know, or?
You know, and all our secrets. I'm joking.
He's any time soon, but yeah.
No, I'm joking. So yeah, I mean, look, I think for me, a lot of my collection, my South Asian collection, because I collect music from all over the world, but the South Asian stuff, I think, was, you know, my parents are originally from Delhi, and I go there quite often. And so in Delhi, there are, you know, a couple of shops that are pretty special. There's a shop called the Shah Music Center, which until very recently used to be kind of in an underground market below Masjid Mosque, the most famous mosque in Delhi, where they sell air conditioning parts and tires and all kinds of crazy, crazy hardware. It's like a maze that you walk through with just, you know, India madness, right? Just, you know, all these like small shops selling crazy stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, there's this bright light and there's this beautiful record shop in all that chaos. And so I've been going there for many, many, many years. And Zafar, the store owner, his dad had started the shop, and I think had moved the shop. Even the shop was actually where Pakistan is now, and it was moved after the partition. Actually, was it his dad or his granddad? Whatever the case, it's a multi-generational shop. And you know, I think a lot of great record digging, especially for the stuff we find, also is built on relationships. And, you know, having these deep relationships with record sellers and shop owners, where, you know, they know that you're, you know, you have a true passion and love for the music, and you know, you're a good customer, and then they start kind of tipping you on to cool things that they have. Digging in India is nothing like digging in a record shop in the West. There's, you know, until very, very recently, there's no conventional shop where you can go through records like this. You go to a record shop, the records are like stacked on top of each other, or like half of them are in like a warehouse somewhere, and the guy is like, what do you want? Which is the most intimidating question anyone can ask you. You're just like, well, I don't know what I want. I'm here to discover music, right? So
that's also like, that's also, I gotta say, like, so I stopped collecting records 20 years ago. Because I had a big collection. I used to live in, I'm from Denmark. And when I moved to the United States, I couldn't bring my records. And I just kind of like, all right, I'm not going to like rebuy all the old stuff. So yeah, I haven't yet to been on one of these like record missions. And honestly, even if I had the chance, like if I was there alone at one of these shops, I would be absolutely lost. You know, Raghav has years of experience of like doing exactly these missions, and so I wouldn't have a chance.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you both. Thank you very much for taking the time. I would encourage anyone to check out the label, and definitely go and have a listen to Punjabi Disco, because it's one of those records that sort of is like, in itself, it's really interesting that it exists, but it's also a brilliant record. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, this is important, but it's also brilliant. You know, it's not like you have to sort of sit there thinking, oh, I should enjoy this.
That's one of the things that we really love about this one in particular, is that that the music is as interesting as the story. So it's like a full package. It's like everything, you know. It's like, if you like the historical factor of it, it's interesting. And if you just like music, it's very, very unique and good. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy your camping. Enjoy your whatever else you're doing. And yeah, I hope to hear lots more records from you in the future.
Awesome. Ben, thanks so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure.
All right. Have a good one.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.